I'm so glad I got out of the habit of saying what day of the week it was.
Yeah.
Why did you let it go so long?
There's a lot of pressure in that.
Why didn't you tell me to shut up?
Well, I know how much it meant to you.
It meant nothing to me.
And the listeners loved it.
Every time I
meet a listener, they go, my favorite part of the show is when Wendy says Thursday. And then I go, but a lot of times it's on a Wednesday. And they go, I know, but it's just fun.
Yeah, that's why it should never have happened. I do enjoy your fearlessness on this show, on the WGN Extra.
Well, thank you. I just, you know, it's just, the whole thing is fun. Start to finish, isn't it? It's just fun.
It is. I enjoy it.
Wendy, during the regular show, we mentioned at the beginning of the show that today is the 10-year anniversary of the death of the king of pop music, Michael Jackson. It's not the day the music died.
No, that was Buddy a different Holly day. And the Big Popper.
The Big Popper.
The Big Popper. The and big, who else?
The Big Bopper's brother, the Big Popper, who had a chain of popcorn stores all throughout the Midwest. He also died that day. Never gets the attention.
Why don't you open up the Big Popper?
The Big Popper would do pretty good. All right, so you had Buddy Holly, you had the Big Bopper, and I believe Richie Valens also died that day. Right? Wasn't that the same day?
Chubby Checker, I thought.
And Chubby Checker and the Lennon Sisters and the Proclaimers were also in that.
Oh, don't say that to them. It's just their career's dead.
Wow, that's worse. That's
500 miles to see them.
Yeah, and I would walk 500 more.
You must like them better.
I like them a little bit more than you. Yeah, I think that was the day the music died. But the day that Michael Jackson died, also very sad. So on the show, we were talking about fun facts. The way they worded it is that you don't know about Michael Jackson, although you knew a lot of these.
Well, some of them are just we didn't care about.
Like, a lot of them
there
we
was
didn't
a Playboy
about.
Bunny that was in the
Ola Ray,
the Thriller video, yeah. Who wanted to date him.
Yeah, she according to their story, she propositioned Michael. I would love to hear a tape of that. Wouldn't you? But there were one or two that we didn't get to that I think certainly bear some mention. For instance, did you know that Michael Jackson allegedly racked up $1 million worth of library fines over the years? How is that possible? Aren't overdue library books 2 cents a day, or has that gone up since I went to the library as a kid?
No, it's way.
There's a lot more now?
Yeah, and movies are $1 a day, and video games.
That's a fair price for an extra day of a DVD of a movie.
It's a little high, but
for a book, what should it? I have no idea what it is now.
It's definitely gone up. And I mean, if he never returned them, there are many times that you hear that the library fine is this exorbitant amount that's worth more than 5 copies of the actual book.
That's true.
But the punishment, you know.
That's true. But now Michael, a very wealthy man, why wouldn't he just send the guy out to buy, like if he wanted a book, why wouldn't he send a Tito out? Why wouldn't he go, Tito, pick up a book, go to Barnes & Noble, Tito, make yourself useful, get me a book.
Ouch to Tito.
I love Tito. Tito was the Jackson 5 to me, Wendy.
Which comic did the joke, get me a tissue, Tito?
I've never heard that.
Oh, yes,
I'd remember that. I don't know
the
answer.
It was somebody's bit that did it. Oh, my God.
Jack Carter?
Yes.
Sounds like a Jack Carter bit to me. This is getting back to something you were talking about with Steve Bertrand earlier. On the day that Michael Jackson died, that's June 25th, 2009, Wikipedia, Twitter, and AOL all simultaneously crashed at 3:15 p.m.
I totally remember this.
Wow.
The first news I heard was on Twitter. I got an alert.
Yeah.
And Farrah Fawcett, I think Farrah was later that day.
I can't remember the order of how they died that day.
It was Eddie Murphy. Tito, give me some tissue.
Oh, that's very funny.
Really?
That's very funny.
It's very dirty. I can't play it because there's a bunch of dirty stuff before
Eddie.
From his delirious thing. I totally remember that.
Yeah.
Let's get to the bottom of who died first.
The chicken or the egg.
I knew you were going to say that.
I had to. By law, I had to say that.
That's which comes first.
Oh. So if you weren't with us in the beginning of the show earlier, we were saying that both Farrah Fawcett and Michael Jackson died on the same day. We couldn't remember who died first, but we were all in agreement that because Michael Jackson died, Farrah Fawcett didn't get anywhere near her due, because that was a significant loss to the world. And
Farrah died first.
She did die first.
That's according to, I don't even know anymore how to read this.
Wikipedia. It's pronounced Wikipedia.
No, I don't think this is. Oh. I think this is Reuters. Farrah Fawcett had about 4 hours of headlines to herself before Michael Jackson kicked her off the front page. And both overshadowed Ed McMahon, who died 2 days earlier.
So he did get, Ed McMahon did get some attention, but certainly not what he would have gotten. And Farrah Fawcett, nowhere near what she would have gotten had Michael Jackson not died on the same day.
Yeah, I guess, but I didn't get an alert that Farrah Fawcett had died. And you know what? I have to say, and I feel kind of bad. Maybe I did, but Michael Jackson was so much bigger that I pushed it on the back burner like everyone else did.
Everybody did. Because immediately there were specials. They were running 24-hour specials on all the cable news networks, all about Michael Jackson. And then I remember there'd be a little crawl at the bottom. You know, Farrah Fawcett died earlier today.
Yeah.
Also, and that was it. That's all she got then. That's not fair. It's like, remember I told you I saw years ago?
Yeah, who was that?
Terry Garr.
That's who it was.
Terry Garr told a story on one of the late night talk shows that she was on an airplane that had some turbulence, and on the same plane as Terry Garr was Cher. Huh? And she said, boy, I hope this plane doesn't crash because Cher will get all the headlines. Every newspaper will say, Cher perishes in airplane crash. And then on the third or fourth or fifth page, Terry Garr also among those on the airplane, like a little small mention.
That is so funny and so factual. I mean, really, that's what would happen.
But the fact that during a dangerous flight, that's what she's thinking. Oh, I mean, you don't want your flight to crash under any circumstance, but then to go, because I'll get no media on this at all and be honest about it. I give her a bit credit for that.
That's really funny.
Here's one more fun fact about Michael Jackson. And again, I will word it the way they worded it, Wendy, that you didn't know.
All right.
So they have put these in two categories, facts that you don't know, and then you pointed out facts that you don't care about.
Some of them. Most of them were that I didn't know and that I did care about, but there were a couple
like
doozies.
That he's Nicole Richie. I mentioned this earlier. He's Nicole Richie's godfather. You just go, oh.
That was interesting.
That's all right, yeah.
I wanted to know that.
Yeah.
Because it spun off into a funny thing where he should have played Vito Corleone.
Right.
So, see, I'm glad we knew that.
Right.
Good work on that one.
He would have been great as Vito Corleone in The Godfather, Michael Jackson.
Why don't you become a casting director in your spare time? Because I'm telling you, everybody says Hollywood's run out of movies.
No.
You would fix that.
I would find a way. Michael Jackson, says here, Wendy, Michael Jackson planned for a huge Las Vegas comeback in 2005. Much like his other shows, this one wasn't going to be done in half measures. The initial idea, I remember hearing this and I thought I imagined it, but they say it's true. The initial idea was to have a 50-foot tall Michael Jackson robot roam through the Nevada desert. The plan was later revised to have a Michael Jackson themed hotel and casino in Las Vegas. But the ideas were scrapped when the star was unable to gather funds required for the project.
How could he not have the funds?
I can't figure that out either.
I
mean, if you just think about residual money alone from his music, and the fact that in addition to his own music, he bought up a lot of the Beatles stuff and other.
That's probably where all his money went.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how could Paul let that happen?
That's weird. How did he not see that coming? Michael was playing him.
To even agree to it, though,
this is the story I've heard from several sources. He became friends with Paul McCartney. They did a couple of songs together. Yeah. And The Girl Is Mine. That was also them together.
Oh, that's right.
The doggone Girl Is Mine.
Was Say, Say, Say even the two of them together?
Yeah. Yeah. So they became friends. And then at some point...
That's why I became friends with you.
Same
thing. I'm going to get your toys.
So then Michael convinces Paul, Sir Paul, to relinquish the rights to his songs. Not to him, but says,
Sony.
You can just get rid of all this stuff. You don't need it. What do you care? You've got your money.
Paul's
so sell
not
the
that
rights.
Stupid.
I don't think so either. And I also don't think, for all that Michael Jackson was, I don't think he, I didn't think he was that conniving. Like, as he's convincing him to get rid of the rights to his songs, I don't, and then in the back of his head, he's like, and I'm going to buy him up, but I can't tell Paul that, or he won't go along with my plan. Does that seem like Michael Jackson to
you? No, that's not it.
Although he is a smooth criminal.
He outbid him for the Beatles music. That's what happened.
It doesn't say he convinced, because all the stories I heard is that he convinced him, don't mess around with this. You don't need this. Just take the money, sell the rights.
I don't know which source to believe. But now, according to 2017, Paul had been fighting to secure the rights.
Didn't he go back and buy the rights?
Yeah. All right, Paul McCartney finally regains Beatles rights after near 50-year-long battle.
But it's cost him a bunch of money to get the rights back.
Yeah, but I don't think...
But now at this point, you go, why bother? You know, he's older now and he's so rich. Does he need the rights to the music?
That's your intellectual property.
I guess.
I don't
understand it because I don't have any intellectual property.
There's a few minutes and
I don't think there is.
A week.
I don't think so.
I don't know exactly what happened. Former Beatle Paul McCartney,
right?
And Michael Jackson during the 1982 hit music video, The Girl Is Mine. So that's when they worked together. According to Billboard magazine, this conflict that caused McCartney and Jackson to lock horns in a real-world battle started in 1985 when Jackson paid nearly $50 million to ATV Music, now called Sony Music, and he purchased a 4,000-song catalog. The catalog contained 250 songs by the Lennon-McCartney songwriting duo. It also included tracks by Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, and Bruce Springsteen.
Wow.
Paul McCartney was not happy about having his own songs purchased out from underneath him by another artist. So to add more insult to injury, Jackson had actually outbid McCartney on the deal. So how did this music become available for sale in the first place?
That's the part I'm saying. I've heard people say that Michael Jackson at some point talked to Paul McCartney and said, stop wasting your time worrying about residuals from all these songs. Just sell it all out outright. Get a huge check. You don't have to worry about it anymore. And then he went in on the bidding for the music.
Wow, I never heard that. Yeah. The fact that McCartney and Jackson were friends and had recorded multiple songs together surely made the deal more of a betrayal. Their friendship never recovered. But how did Paul McCartney, one of the most famous pop songwriters of the 20th century, end up in a position where another artist could buy the rights to his songs? That's the exact question we had.
Yes.
This is from thevintagenews.com.
Oh.
When the Beatles' debut album, Please Please Me, was released in March 1963, their manager, Brian Epstein, published the songs with the company Northern Songs. The company was primarily owned by Epstein himself and by publisher Dick James, along with John Lennon and Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr. The other two Beatles songwriters split ownership of the remaining 40%. Northern Songs became a public company, in 1965, with Lennon and McCartney owning 15% each, and with Harrison and Starr sharing a smaller percentage. Harrison was not happy about this and even wrote a song about his meager cut in the deal.
Except that, as great as George Harrison was, and he wasn't contributing to the extent that Lennon and McCartney were. His name is on a handful of songs. He co-wrote a handful of songs, but the bulk of it, 90% of the Beatles songs, are John Lennon and Paul McCartney. So,
and songwriting, is a little more important in my opinion.
I think so.
In 1969, Dick James sold his stake in the company to ATV Music. Lennon and McCartney tried to outbid ATV, but they didn't have enough money. Again, that surprises me, but I guess that's 1969.
Oh, yeah.
After ATV had taken control of the Beatles song catalog, Lennon and McCartney sold their company stakes to ATV as well. That was probably not a great move.
Right.
69, they probably needed the money. So when ATV Music went up for sale, they offered McCartney one more chance to bid on the rights to the Lennon-McCartney song catalog, which was a decent move for them to do. Hey, dude, you want to get your music back?
Yeah.
This is when Michael Jackson stepped in and paid $47.5 million to become the owner of the catalog. In 2006, the matter became more complicated for McCartney when Michael Jackson, faced with a potential bankruptcy, agreed to sell half of his ownership in the company back to Sony ATV. This would give Sony 75% ownership of the Lennon-McCartney song catalog, was worth about $1 billion back then. Mm-hmm. That's 2006. McCartney was left with only one shot to get his songs back. According to the United States Copyright Act of 1967, any publishing rights to songs written before 1978 could be regained by their author after 56 years.
Oh.
Since the first Beatles songs had been written between the years 62 and 63, McCartney would have to wait until 2018 before he could hope to get his songs back, and that he did, but he had to pay a lot of money for it. Jackson's share of the Lennon-McCartney catalog became part of his estate, which was controlled by his attorneys. And then in 2015, McCartney began the fight to reclaim 32 Beatles songs written in 1962. Boy, this was a mess, but I don't have any information about Michael saying, you know, maybe you should sell it. That's terrible if a so-called friend
right.
or even someone like you work with would say, like if Steve Cochran says something to you like, Bill, hey, sell all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then he goes and buys it
underhandedly behind
That's
the scenes. Yeah.
Mean thing.
And Michael Jackson was a lot of things, but conniving, like you don't go, boy, is he the kind of guy that would do that to a friend? I mean, they were friends.
But I don't know if that's 100%
true. If it's not accurate. I've heard it from a few different sources, though.
I need to read it.
Yeah. You want it on the internet to believe it.
In order for it to be true.
All right.
I'll snope it during the commercial.
All right. Snope it up. All right. We'll take a break.
Snope it real good.
Kim Gordon joins us. She won't now. Maybe she will. We'll find out. We'll try to coerce her into coming back and doing some news and then more show.
All right. We have been talking about the Beatles. We have been talking about Michael Jackson and briefly Ed McMahon. He died that same week.
Yes.
2 days before Farrah Fawcett, and then Michael Jackson stole her thunder later in the day.
Did you ever get to meet Ed McMahon?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure if you met Ed McMahon?
He was at the Loop a lot.
Yeah,
with Johnny B.
He had a morning show at the Loop for years.
No, I mean, in as guests. I don't recall.
No?
You...
He was such a nice man. I met him. We had him on three different shows at three different stations, and just the nicest guy in the world. The one thing he said that shocked me was, in my head, he and Johnny were very close friends, and it was not that way. And he didn't dislike Johnny, and Johnny didn't dislike him. There was just no interaction other than their time on the show together.
Like us.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
I was just about to say, we don't hang out, but right. I mean, I like you a lot and care a great deal for you.
But didn't you think, like, probably after a show, Johnny'd say, hey, Ed, let's go get some ribs.
Dinner.
Yeah, and they would go and have ribs.
No, because Johnny didn't seem the type to, like...
He wasn't like that, though. I mean, he was kind of...
But I'm just going to say, like, in my vision watching it, my opinion, it seemed like Johnny was so much above Ed McMahon that I could see Ed going, hey, boss, you want to go do something? And Johnny going, no, not with you.
Not with you, Ed McMahon. Doc and I are going to play skee-ball. You can't go with us.
I could see him hanging out with Doc.
He said he was at Johnny's house once, and I said, wait.
Just like me at your house. Just once.
Oh,
I've been there more.
Yeah, I guess so.
Twice.
Yeah, but you're always there when I'm out of town, which makes
you better watch what you're saying, Bill. This is becoming a little bit too familiar.
I in my head, they were always palling around. Before the show, they would do stuff. After the show, they would do stuff. And it was nothing like that.
Well,
very strange.
Honestly, I think Johnny thought he was at, and he was, at such an above level over Ed McMahon.
Yeah.
With us, it's just proximity. And quite honestly, if we hung out, we'd have nothing to talk about on the air.
That's true,
Even when we get in the morning, we don't really talk that much.
Right, right.
Because, you know, we'd lose all this mad.
Save it for the show.
Yeah, that's true. So Johnny would pal around with Steve Martin all the time and Carl Reiner all the time.
But
like,
they're
he
at
had...
his level. Doc was not at his level. I mean, not Doc. Ed McMahon.
Did he golf with them a lot? Did he?
Johnny was a tennis guy.
Oh, he was.
So you'd play tennis and he'd play cards.
Bill's a tennis guy.
Right. Johnny and I would have been tight. There's no question. But like Johnny didn't have much by way of peers. Like now there's a bunch of late night talk show hosts. So there's something of a brotherhood or a fraternity.
What did he have, Jack Parr?
Well, Jack Parr preceded him. He was the host of The Tonight Show before Johnny. So I guess you could almost say Merv Griffin, but I can't see them palling around together. Dinah Shore was on the daytime talk show circuit. So
no contemporaries.
There weren't really... The only guy who really did late night talk...
Doc Severinsen. No.
Well,
no. What's his name?
Joey Bishop.
No, Don Kirshner. That's who I meant.
Don Kirshner's rock concert?
Yeah, he should have hung out with Don Kirshner.
Yeah, I guess. Don Kirshner and he could have been friends, I guess.
I just want to say Doc Severinsen every time I open up my mouth.
Why?
I don't know. I keep saying his name instead of Ed McMahon's or Don Kirshner.
Yeah.
There was no other late night host.
You have a trumpet underneath your desk.
Yes, I do.
Joey Bishop.
And I'm happy to see you.
Joey Bishop, and then I guess Dick, you could say Dick Cavett also.
Oh, yeah.
They were both on ABC. Johnny was on NBC for years and years. So ABC every once in a while would throw somebody on to see if they could make a dent in Johnny's ratings, and then they never could.
But in my opinion, I see Johnny more as Howard Stern, where Johnny would hang out with celebrities more than other people. Like, you know, Howard is like hobnobbing with the celebs instead of hanging out with stupid radio guys.
Yeah, I guess so.
I couldn't see Johnny hanging out with other...
That.
Yeah, at least in his own mind.
Yeah. Although, like, Dick Cavett was a writer for Johnny for years before he got his own show. So they certainly knew each other. But I
again,
I
a writer, and
yeah,
he's the top talent.
Yeah.
He had an ego. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like you.
Yeah.
you're the new Johnny.
Right.
Bill's ego is just
it's out of
so
out of control.
Huge.
No, it's out of control.
It's a wonder that baseball cap fits.
It's the reason I wear it, so my ego doesn't fall out of my head. All right. Kim, thanks. It's Bill Luff. It's Wendy Snyder.
Where's the rest of it?
That was... Oh, there it is. I just thought that was a very fast song.
This is so cool. What is this?
Meghan Trainor, Me Too.
You like this?
I like Meghan Trainor.
Yeah?
I didn't know much of her, but I'm watching this Songland show, which people write a song.
Write a song,
and then they present it for like Will I Am to do. Now, last week was the Jonas Brothers.
The songwriter writes a song and then performs it.
No,
person?
Yes, yeah. They write a song. It's like The Voice. You get like a contestant that writes a song, performs it, and then ultimately there are some judges that help you perfect it. And then either the Jonas Brothers, Meghan Trainor, I think, is on this upcoming week.
Yeah.
They will record the song that you wrote.
Wow.
So you don't have to have a good singing voice.
Well, almost all of them perform it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But my son Michael's a songwriter, so not that any of these people would probably perform stuff he writes because he's more rock and roll.
Yeah.
There are a lot of tips and good ways to work on your songwriting and some constructive criticism. And I didn't know who Meghan Trainor was. She is like the next person who will be recording the next songwriter's song. It's really kind of interesting. It's called
Songland. She's all about the bass, right?
Oh, yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that song too.
Yeah.
I like Meghan Trainor and didn't even know it.
I think she had another hit after that, too.
Yeah, she did.
Right?
But I think that was her first
one. That was the one that got her
in. I think so.
We've got Treble right here in River City. Was that her other...
That was from The Music Man.
Treble.
Oh.
Because of bass. I was going the opposite way. I guess if you have to explain it sucked.
I got it.
Thank you, Kim.
There's a story, Wendy, that... kind of plays into something we discussed on the show a couple of weeks ago. I had an incident at the house by which we got a new washing machine or dryer.
Oh,
dryer.
God. How
it's
do you not know?
It's a dryer.
You didn't get two together? You got one or the other? Okay.
Separate. We had to get a different washing machine a couple of years ago.
The one that ate your clothes, right?
Yeah, that became a horrible situation because it kept eating my shirts.
But it didn't eat the shirts when Terry used it.
Only when I did it.
Was that your guy way of getting out of doing laundry?
Here's what I learned. No, because now I know how to do it. But I still let her do it.
Was this operator error?
It was because
it's
a washing machine that has, like, our old washing machine had three settings.
Okay.
And I could figure out what went to what. But this one has three different areas where you have to program things in.
Right.
And for some reason.
Is it front loading?
No.
Okay.
So on the top loading.
Top loading.
Okay.
Right.
But
so,
it's just temperature and spin
material
cycle. And what else?
There's one, the final setting for my shirts, and I don't know why, but I have to use the delicate setting because my shirts, like myself,
you want cold water.
Are very delicate.
Okay.
But well, those camisoles you wear under your polo shirts are very
They're delicate.
I'm surprised not hand-washable. Do they need to hang to dry as well?
They don't need to, but they prefer. But if I don't, for some reason, and you would think of all the clothes that are being put through the washing machine, you would think mine would be the
yes.
least delicate. But
yeah.
as it turns out, they're the opposite. They're the most delicate. So where my wife and my daughter's clothes are put on sturdy, mine are put on delicate. And if I don't, I get holes in them. I get rips in the seams all the time. So, all right. About 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, the dryer just stopped working, and we needed a new dryer, and it wouldn't fit through the doorway, you know, like as you go up the basement stairs into the hallway, it wouldn't fit through that door, because I learned that the people who owned the house after or before us remodeled that section of the hallway and made the door a lot smaller. So
and the dryer was already down there.
But
didn't it originally start with you got a new dryer and the guys couldn't get the new dryer in the house?
Yeah, my wife ordered one and they brought it and then they couldn't get it. They couldn't get the new dryer in and they couldn't get the old dryer out.
So he was dryerless.
Couldn't dry the clothes. We had to, as we mentioned, we had to put them out on a clothesline like they did in cartoon strips in the 1950s.
I still have a clothesline. I use it.
You do?
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I saw anyone use it. It would make every day when I'd come home and I'd
go to Europe. They
all
use
my
them
clothes.
All over
I know that in Europe it's commonplace, but I don't remember until we had to do it last month. I don't remember the last time I saw clothes drying on a clothesline.
I do it every summer. I take it down during the winter and put it up because you can put your beach towels over it to dry.
Oh.
We used to have clotheslines at camp. I used to love that.
And again, this could just be my clothes, because obviously my clothes are made out of a material that's foreign to everybody else. That's why they're delicate. I don't know. So why do they, when they dry, why are they stiffer than when you put them through?
Well, because they're not fluffing them.
Dryer's warm.
Yeah.
So it rotates it and circlifies it, and it's warm, and it tumbles, and it's softer.
Yeah.
If you just hang something up, depending on the material.
Delicate.
Then yours should dry fine.
Well, and you're also throwing a bounce sheet in there, which is
I bet that's
softener.
What it is. It's the fabric softener.
But it's the
issue.
Heat and the movement. When you put something on, although if you put bed sheets on the clothesline, they're not stiff at all. The
really?
Wind blows on, and they smell like, well, in the
like
old
a summer
days.
Day.
Yeah.
Now I don't know what
smells
like.
Do you have a dryer in your living room now, or where's the dryer?
Well, now my wife had to reorder a dryer that was thinner, taller and thinner, so it'd fit through the doorway.
Right.
But then our old dryer is just down in our basement.
So it's just going to sit there forever.
No, you need somebody.
Take it apart.
He can't do
We've
it.
We've been told
Terry
it can be disassembled. Terry could do a way better job than I could. But I don't know how to disassemble a dryer.
1-800-GOT-JUNK.
They would
point
come
to it and they take
it's called a sledgehammer.
Yeah, that's what I told him.
Just sledge it?
Just sledge it.
Well, you're not going to reuse it.
Right, break it up and take it out.
I have images
there's
of
no
flying
nails.
Metal.
You don't see any screws or anything to unscrew it?
Yeah, there's all kinds of like non-standard sized screws and stuff.
Right.
This was made in sometime in the 50s. You can tell everything about it says 1950s. It just looks like it's in the 50s. And I can't believe they made a dryer that lasted,
that
honestly,
long.
Almost 70 years. That's phenomenal.
That's pretty
would
incredible.
Would it make a good planter?
Wow. You know what? Yes. It would make a good planter. Yes, it would, Kim. That's what I'll do. I'll craft a planter out of it.
Well, someone gave us a text, Facebook message wondering whatever happened with your dryer situation.
Thanks for asking. The reason I bring it up is this. There's pictures in the paper today of a couch just sitting it on a front lawn for similar reasons. Here's the story. It takes place right here in Chicago. Nearly 6 months after Rosalind Drew ordered a new sofa, delivery crews abandoned the couch on her front lawn, leaving it to sit for 2 weeks. Drew waited since January for her order from One Stop Bedrooms. They're not a sponsor, are they, Jasmine? No? They pulled their sponsorship?
I'm not making my one stop there.
No, don't. A leather recliner and a sleeper sofa. While she waited, she plotted out how Cruz could fit it through her doorway by tilting it on its side and then turning it through the doorway. But she said that the delivery guys just didn't listen to her plan. She said he brought it through over this railing and then past this tree. He was pushing it past this tree where all the branches were sticking out on the sofa. And I said, why'd you bring it in like that? Everybody else uses the stairs. Her highly anticipated couch never made it inside, though, and it wasn't returned to the warehouse. The delivery guy simply left the sofa outside on her lawn.
Okay, A, you don't do that. Hopefully she used a credit card and I would have canceled that payment.
Right. Wendy, their name is One Stop Bedrooms. They stopped.
Well, I would be so irate, I would keep calling until I got an answer and had somebody come get that picked up. That's ridiculous.
Awful. The delivery guys left the sofa outside on her lawn, and the couch, cardboard, and blankets from the delivery sat outside for 2 weeks.
Oh, the moving blankets that they use sometimes to put around it so it doesn't
get scratched or something.
The guy just dropped it down on the ground and said, ma'am, I can't take that back. I said, you have to take it back into your truck. He said, no, I can't take it back. Drew said, who else's furniture do they come to your home and just leave it on your sidewalk if you can't get it through the door? A representative for Rydell Movers said, if they can't complete a delivery, what they do is up to the company that hired them. So that means they're using a third-party trucking company.
A lot of them do.
Yeah, yeah. We've contracted out, so we follow protocol from all the other companies, he said. It depends on what they instruct us to do. I believe him, however, I've never seen an instance where a delivery person can't get the delivery through the door, so just goes, hey, it's your problem.
Yeah.
I did my part of the job.
Although I'm looking at the CBS Channel 2 investigative reports,
yes.
And there's a highlighted part that she allegedly agreed to that said, we're going to leave that outside.
You know,
it says, our records indicate you agreed at the time of delivery for the sofa to be left outside. We cannot order a replacement. I don't know if that's
was
true.
Was that in something maybe she signed and didn't know she signed it when you sign a delivery?
Some
you
fine
know?
Print at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. No one reads that stuff.
I know that.
I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody.
I know.
Of just signing and going, well, what could possibly go wrong?
But I also live with a lawyer, so,
so you're protected.
Yeah. In the past, when I've bought stuff with my wife, they will go out of their way to say, now you've purchased an oversized item. Do you know for sure that it will fit through the door? I was there when we bought the washing machine, and I remember measuring like crazy every dimension to make sure that it fit. But Terry ordered this dryer over the phone. She just saw it online.
Over the phone?
She bought it over the phone, man. She saw it online, and she liked what she saw. She read the specs. She obviously didn't
measure
the doorway because she assumed they got it down. They must be able to get it back up.
I just know that we redid our kitchen and we left a spot for, we have a small refrigerator. It's not like a college size one, but when we moved into our house, there was a cutout spot for the refrigerator that would only accommodate a smaller one.
Yeah.
So we lived with that for a while and we still have it, but ultimately I would like to get a real adult sized refrigerator.
Yeah,
it is adult sized, but it's not.
Smaller though.
It is much smaller, cubic feet.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to be very specific. Same with the stove. You've got to completely measure that find out. And when we bought this refrigerator, the same problem, and this was 20 years ago, the delivery crew could not get it through our doorway from the dining room to the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, and we had measured, too. So I don't know what the hassle was. They ended up taking the door off of the refrigerator, and they slid it through. But they scratched the hell out of our woodwork. And it's just so frustrating to me because they didn't put the blankets, and that's what those moving blankets are for. And we called to complain, and I think they said, you know, we'll take $100 off the refrigerator. Is that enough? And I'm like, Yeah, I guess. I mean, we were just new homeowners. We didn't know what to do.
But was that enough to repair the damage?
You could just actually kind of fill it in.
Oh, you could?
Yeah, but it was still, like, there were probably 8 or 10 scratches on the wood. It just didn't ruin the doorway.
Annoying.
But, I mean, you'd expect delivery people to kind of,
right.
Oh, it doesn't fit. Here's what we do.
Right.
Plus,
right.
They could have come around the back door, but they just kind of took the door off of the refrigerator and just kind of jammed it through. It was just terrible to watch.
When we moved into our current house, I already had display cabinets for the toys in our old place. So I measured all the doorways, front doorways, hall doorways, bedroom doorways, everything matched. What I didn't account for was the space on the stairs, you know, because you're coming up in an angle. So it was missing by a couple of inches, like 2 or 3 inches. That was it. So I said to the delivery guys, what do we do? And he showed me, he goes, we'll just take all this molding off on the stairs. And I said, explain that to my wife. And she just shakes her head no. Like, that's not going to happen. So they ended up having to disassemble the display cases and then rebuilding them upstairs once they were in the room, which took all day. I mean, they charged us, and I understood that. It took all day to do that. But
molding could be popped right back on, though. But here's the thing. They have to take it off very slowly and carefully and delicately. Or you're going to have to get new molding.
Well, it was all vintage stuff from when the house was built 100 years ago. And he even said to me, he goes, a lot of times this comes on, you don't even know it's ever done. I go, what about the other times? He goes, you never know until it's
done.
You
can't take that risk.
So, it was explained to me by my wife that risk was not going to be taken that day.
Well, everyone needs to measure.
Yes.
I mean, really, every time I go to the hardware store, we got our bathroom painted and I needed to hang hooks for the kids' towels. And it took me like a week to hang the mirror. And then it's like, I better get these towel hooks up. So I went to our hardware store in town. And every time I go there, I have to make like 2 trips because they're like, oh, did you bring the screws you used before? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I sure didn't. Mm. And they're like, well, how big is the hole on the hook? Did you bring the hook? I go, I sure did not.
See you in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
See, I got smart the other day because I needed these specialty clips for a curio cabinet because it's glass going on those little peg holes.
Yeah.
And you can't put glass. You have to have the cushion kind. And so I needed some more because I had ordered an extra shelf. And I finally got smart and took a picture of them.
Oh,
and then when I went to the hardware store, I could show them.
Yeah.
But we didn't have that, you know,
15
years ago, whatever it was.
It's a new development.
Yeah.
Kim, thank you for hanging out. Appreciate it. We'll say goodbye next.
That is all she wrote.
That's it?
I don't know who she is.
She should write more.
I want to hurry home and go sit on my couch that is in the back alley. That was left outside for me.
That's romantic.
Well, this poor woman, the couch
toodles?
Was out there for 2 weeks.
That's too much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed yourself. And then tomorrow, a whole nother show.
Can't wait.
All new topics, all new discussions, some new people. It's going to be great. You'll see. Thanks again to Kim Gordon for stopping in. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.